This is the Larry Hardesty Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Well, Don LaGreca's going to be angry at me, and that's okay. He's going to be angry with me. He's going to make fun of me. He's going to talk about me and ask me, what am I doing? What don't I have a life? All the things that I've heard him say. Why is he going to say that to me? Because right now I'm trying to find the Mets on Peacock. Yeah, I know. I heard it. I got it. I heard him just rant on somebody who said it was too early. I understand what he's saying. I get it. It's one game. Larry, what's the big deal? Okay, if you don't have it, you don't have it. All right, so what? Stop complaining. I'm not happy that the Mets are on Peacock. I'm just saying. That's how I feel. Am I a bad guy for that? Am I wrong for feeling that way? Is that what's wrong for me? What me? Because SNY is not carrying the game. Picks 11. No Mets. I got to get Peacock. Listen, they did me a favor. Normally, they start 11:30. I should be happy that it's on at noon. We'll keep you up to date with the Mets and Marlins here on 98.7 ESPN and the Yankees and Astros at 1:35. We'll keep you up to date on that as well. Plus, we have Christian Winfield will join us a little later in the show or two. A lot of conversation around the Brooklyn Nets these days, isn't it? Lots of conversation around the Brooklyn Nets. Lots. So we'll talk to him about what's going on with Kyrie and KD and all this other stuff. And yes, I will. I'll try to do the best I can to figure out what the heck the Knicks are doing. Because I really don't know. I really don't. I'm not going to sit here and pretend. I know we're supposed to have all the answers. Oh, this is what's going to happen. Well, it's very simple. What the Knicks are going to do is... I have no clue. No clue. None. I'm lost. I sat draft night dumbfounded. Dumbfounded at what was going on. But we'll talk about that later. Right now, I'm going to start with the New York Yankees, who got no hit yesterday. And this is the subject of my poll question. At Hardesty ESPN, at ESPN NY, 98.7 FM. And I want to get just a quick view, quick thought process from the Yankee fans as they prepare to watch today. Now, yesterday, and this Yankee team has been phenomenal. They have been the epitome of consistency. They have dominated. We're talking record-setting wins at this point. They've done everything you could ask. They've won series. They've hit in the clutch. They've got great pitching. They've got timely hitting. They've got an outstanding bullpen, managerial. Aaron Boone's done a great job managing. He's mixed up some things, got a little hit and run, running the bases defensively. They have played great. There's nothing you can knock about the Yankees. Nothing. Even when people say, we'll see how they play now. They're going to play some really good teams. We'll see what happens now. They beat them. They've held their own. If they had, they've taken the series or they've split the series, they have been outstanding. And then they got no hit yesterday by three pitchers, combined no hitter. So here's my question for you, Yankee fans, at Hardesty ESPN, at ESPNNY, 98.7 FM. And I'm going to wait to hear from you before I give you my thoughts on it. Here's the question. Yankee fans, after yesterday's no-hitter, which best describes your feelings? No biggie, it's one game? Or will they hit in the playoffs? Because ultimately, isn't that the main concern in the back of your mind, Yankee fans? You're happy with what they've done right now? They've been great. I mean, other than, will Aaron Judge resign? I understand that's a major concern too. But I'm talking as far as the team is concerned. I'm talking on the field. Isn't that your major concern? Isn't that your major fear? Isn't that the one thing that puts a caveat on how great the season is? Because the regular season, look, the regular season's been outstanding, as I mentioned. And I realize, because it's the Yankees, the success of the season is dominated by what we do in the playoffs. It's either a World Series championship or it's a flawed season. It's a failed season. That's the mandate from management, and it trickles down to the fans. That's why fans are, we haven't won since 2009. I haven't won since 86. Okay? So, in comparison, you've had more trophies recently than I have as a Met fan. But that's the one thing. So I'm just curious to see if, because not that it's a combined no-hitter. Okay, it can happen. But it's a combined no-hitter against the Houston Astros. It's a combined no-hitter against the team that I believe you will place in the ALCS when you get there. It's going to be Houston. I really believe that. I think it's going to be the Astros. And obviously, as a Yankee fan, heck, as a Yankee player, you got revenge on your mind. You do. You want them. You want to beat them. Not that you don't want to beat anybody that's in the ALCS. Duh. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, because of how you felt, the questions surrounding that Astros team, that ultimately was proven that they were not playing by the rules, that you could have won that series if they were playing by the rules. And now, in the rematch, you want to beat them and you want to sweep them. And if I were a Yankee fan, I would feel the same way. I would feel the exact same way. I want to prove to you that we were better than you, that you had to cheat to beat us. That would be the thought process. Okay? That would be it. So I get it. So for me, I'm just curious. Not a Yankee fan. Don't know. But I was wondering how you feel today after that situation yesterday, where not that you were no hit, but you were no hit by a team that you could possibly face in the postseason. And after just a nice win in the first game of the series on Thursday, have only scored a run over the last two games. 1-800-919-3776. Also via Twitter, at Hardesty ESPN, at ESPNNY 98_7 FM. Gerrit Cole weighed in yesterday after the game on the Astros no-hitter. Here's what the Yankee ace had to say.
I mean, it's just a tough one for the boys in general. I thought we played every pitch today. We played really sharp defense. We pitched well pretty much for the most part. You know, it just obviously, you know, the cold hard truth is we got outpitched and outplayed. So, you know, credit to the opponent, absolutely, for sure. Magical day for them. You know, Altuve's hitting the ball inside off the plate. The left-hander's capitalizing on, obviously, a mistake pitch there late, and they continue to put pressure on us. So it's just, you know, overall just kind of a downer, kind of a tough day, and you know, one of those days that hopefully we can learn from and be able to, you know, push through if we get in that situation again.
Well, I think so. And you know, I'm going to reserve my comments later. But listen, the Yankees have played well. They still have a chance to split the series with a win today. And I think that's what you're going for right now. The Yankees have been just so hot. I mean, it's surprising to see that they lose. It really is. Here's Josh Donaldson on the Astros no-hitter combined yesterday.
They're a good team. They've played well. They have guys over there that have had tremendous success. They've had tremendous success as an organization. But, I mean, we feel good about, obviously, where we're at right now. And we've obviously not been, you know, no-hit. That doesn't feel good. But we feel good about our team. That hasn't changed. And we'll look back and tomorrow and make some adjustments and be ready to go.
There's no doubt about that. I expect it. But it was, you know, the trio of Javier, Neris, and Presley, no-hitter. Yankees became the team with the best winning percentage, that's 732, to ever be hitless in at least 50 games in the season. I'm telling you, that's how dominant this Yankee team has been. But once again, we're not talking regular season. We're talking postseason. And the concern, does it concern you, Yankee fans? It's just a little something in the back of your mind. That's our poll question. At Hardesty ESPN, at ESPNNY 98_7FM. After yesterday's no-hitter, Yankee fans, which best describes your feelings? No biggie, it's one game. Or will they hit in the playoffs? 1-800-919-3776. And also our poll question at Hardesty ESPN at ESPNNY98_7FM. Let's go to the phones. Brian is in Florida. Brian, start us off.
Hi, Larry. I grew up in Westbury. The guy that takes your call went to college where my brother went, about a mile from my house, Hofstra University. Mm-hmm. I played baseball for Florida State. I played for Dick Houser. I'm not a big Joey Gallo fan, and I have everything to back it up in statistics. It's time to move on from Joey Gallo. He's hitting .187. He's got 9 home runs. He strikes out all the time. He's batting 9th in the lineup. I would trade him, eat the salary, and trade him to Kansas City for Benintendi, who used to play for the Red Sox. He's a lefty hitter, and he's a better contact hitter. That's what the Yankees need, a left-handed hitter that can hit home runs, but also doesn't strike out all the time. And he's batting, I think, .260, .265. What do you think? It's time to move on.
All right, Brian. Now, Brian, that's not a bad trade. Thanks for the phone call. I'm not sure. This is just me. I'm not sure if I'm Kansas City that I try to get a little bit more from the Yankees on this, because the Yankees, if indeed they move him, and I think that, because really when you think about it, Aaron Hicks is starting to hit a little better recently. Am I right, Yankee fans? He's starting to hit a little better. His fielding is very good. He's a switch hitter. He walks too. His batting eye is pretty good. So I agree with you that one of the two will be moving. I don't think they will keep both. Just me. But I don't know that just Gallo gets it done. Because if I'm Kansas City, like I said, I know you're in a rush to move him. You want to get rid of him. And I'm going to try to get a little bit more from you. That's number one. Number two, why do you think I want Joey Gallo? You don't want him for the same reason. Why do you think I want him? Do you think I have a lineup that I'm going to bring somebody, even though Benintendi is not hitting the way he did in Boston? He's still hitting, what close to 70, 80 points higher than Gallo? Or are you thinking that, well, it'll be a smaller market? Well, these are the same average numbers that he had where he was before. Previously, I don't see a difference in him. You know, people say, well, man, he really struggled. Everybody can't play in New York. These are the same. He's consistent. These are pretty much the same numbers he's had in his career. Look at his average. Look at his stats. So, once again, I agree with you that he would be a piece that the Yankees will probably be interested in moving. But I don't know what they're going to get. And I don't know that it's a one-on-one situation for them. I still believe, even though they're going to have to eat some money, that they still will have to add somebody else in that deal. Spike's in St. Pete. What's up, Spike?
Well, good. 1 week belated. I'm sure you had an outstanding Father's Day, as I did. So let me tell you something I found out yesterday about the Yankee game. Mm-hmm. I still have a lot of people that converse with me up in the New Jersey, Bronx area. And it was unmitigated gall, and I was very upset. Now, I'm being honest with you, no jokes this time. When Javier, I believe that was the name of the pitcher, when he left the mound, he didn't even get applause. It was negligible. Now, I'll acknowledge that 95% of the crowd were Yankee fans. I'm sure you all agree, correct?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Okay.
At least 90.
Right. It's just humanity. He pitched a brilliant game. If it was when we grew up, or I grew up, and you were after me, it's just a proper thing to do. The man was brilliant. Stand up, and even if it's a little smittering of applause, acknowledge it. Now, I know my friend said, Cole was really dealing too. I said, that's no excuse. That's a classless move. It really is. And I know all the mitigating factors about the Houston and the cheating. Look, they're the two best teams in the American League after half a season. They are. They're just the two best teams, whether they meet or not. Remember, it goes back to 0-0. In the playoffs.
Right.
The fact that they added another team, how long do you let things linger? So I'll leave it at that. Your Mets are doing really well. The third Beaver in our Three Musketeers, he says, Larry must be smiling. And Larry's smiling. Larry's happy. So one comment on draft. I have to. Look, you said to me in a message, not good enough. Larry. When they said whatever the name was from France, what ran through your mind?
Oh no, another Frank. What? If, no, it was two things. Oh no, and what is this team's obsession with players from France?
Yeah. Frank was a Phil Jackson idea who will hang around the NBA for 12, 15 years because he can give you 10 minutes of defense. Frederick Weiss was never even made it here.
Vince Carter spared us by dunking over him.
Right, they nailed the fly. I just was going through the machinations like we always do at nighttime. For people who don't know, I'm sure most of you, you're on it with Gordon every night, you know, after the games or whatever games are on. And I'm trying to figure out a backcourt. I understand Brunson. Brunson played great in the playoffs.
Right.
So did Jerome James.
Yeah, I know.
But really, for 13 games and got a $40 million contract?
That's right.
The kid's good. The pedigree's good. Leon's son. We know all the things, but that's not enough.
Nope.
That's not enough. And our mutual friend in Union, New Jersey, just told me a while ago, he said they're going to stick with what they have and throw the kids out there, which I'm fine with. I'm fine with. Let quickly play. Let McBride, the G League sensation, and let the other kid from Texas. I think Mitchell's going to be moved to Dallas during free agency. So I just wanted to hear your reaction. As far as the Yankees and Mets go, look, you never know in baseball. You're one injury away. I always go back to Tony Conigliero. You know?
Right.
But it was – Yankees are playing great. These two pitchers were brilliant. How do you like – I told Tom Bauer when he picked up, this – he's a kid to me, Verlander, at 39 years old, Tommy John.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to make you smile. He may be one of the best pitchers of this generation and have an outstanding week.
All right. Thank you, Spike. Appreciate the call. Listen, I have no problem if you're telling me that the Knicks are going to play the kids. Okay, I get it. But my concern here is this, does the head coach know that you're playing the kids? That's my concern. Is the head coach aware that that's what we're doing? Because I'm not buying it. This head coach is going to the third year of a five-year deal. His first year was really good. He surprised everybody. Hoping for a play-in and getting the fourth seed was above anything you could hope for. But that meant that the following year, what you had to do is really improve upon that. Doesn't mean that you had to get the fourth seed again, because everybody understood that other teams got better. Other teams' injured players returned. But you had to at least make the playoffs. Not only didn't you make the playoffs, you didn't make the play-in. So, obviously, the eye, yes, is on the front office, no question about that. But the eye is also on what's going on with this head coach. Because he had multiple opportunities to play the kids and did not play the kids last season until the season was done. Then we started to hear about the kids. Oh, the kids are this, the kids are that, the kids are this. So we'll see. It's clear by moving salary around that they are trying to land a free agent, probably Brunson. That's where everybody's talking about. I mean, you know, all the, as Spike mentioned, all the connections, you understand. Son of the president of the Knicks is his agent. All right. His dad is now on the coaching staff. So everything, you know, it's like college. Everything that you had to do, you've done, except for try to sign him. But what happens if Dallas decides that they really want him and you don't get him? What happens then? What's plan Z? Because unfortunately, it just seems as a Knicks fan that whenever the Knicks go into this situation, whenever it's about free agency, whenever it never turns out the way they expect it to turn out. It's never plan A. It's never plan A. It's B, it's Z, it's E, it's never A. It's never A. So as I'm watching them maneuver and do all these different things, and I understand they tried to move up to get Ivy and they couldn't get it done. Okay, they tried. It takes two to make a deal. Okay, you couldn't do it. Got it. At least you tried. Even afterwards, they tried. Great. But to then not end up with any first-round pick? I don't know. I mean, the second-round pick, the kid from Duke, he's got some promise. There's no doubt about it. He's got some promise. Played well. But I'm, you know, as a Knicks fan, you're just, what are they doing? And Leon Rose sent a statement out, trying to move salary cap. I get it. I understand. I understand what he's saying. All I'm saying is, it hasn't worked before. Why am I enthusiastic to think it'll work this time? Bob is in Westbury. Bob, you are next on 98.7.
Larry, how are we doing today?
Great, Bob. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I just wanted to piggyback on what you were talking about with Thibodeau a little while ago.
Yes.
So the way I view him, he's like a, you know, when you even think back to that year where they really exceeded expectations, he gets those guys to play so hard day in and day out in the regular season. But when it came down to the playoffs, even in the Atlanta series, when that talent, you know, when the effort level is, you know, when the playoffs increases, the Knicks didn't have that next gear to go to because they played so hard, you know, throughout the regular season. And you kind of saw once that talent pool or once that talent discrepancy was gone, they really, you know, he's like a specialist. He's a guy that can come in with a group of veterans and he's going to get them to play 110%, you know, but with a younger team where it's, you know, it's just about effort. You know, it's almost like fool's gold a little bit. He has that initial effect, and then I think guys kind of, they get tired of it, and they can't sustain that, you know, year in and year out. So I think he does kind of, you know, he runs through his teams. If you look at his track record, he's got about a 3 or 4 year window, and then he's got to find a new spot because, you know, I think everybody starts tuning him out, and they can't commit to playing with that energy level, you know, 82 games a year, and, you know, that's one thing to be said whether they should be able to or not, but that's kind of how I feel about Thibodeau. He gets maximum effort initially, and then the results start to dissipate a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing, Bob. You make an interesting point, and thanks for the phone call. Here's the thing. You're 1,000% right, but that's why you should play the young people. Okay, why are you burning out your veterans playing them 38, 40 minutes a game? If you want players to play hard, okay, which he does, and he demands that, young players play hard. Otherwise, they don't play. They come from colleges where they play hard all the time. Now, I get defensively there could be an issue. They don't play the same tough defense. I understand that. But during the regular season, you cannot tell me, can't tell me, that instead of playing Julius Randle 40 to 42 or 43 minutes a game, that you couldn't play him 30 minutes a game and spread the other 12 minutes among other front court players and stagger it where, okay, my backcourt's going to have to carry me while I rest my front court. Okay, Julius is back. He can carry it a little bit while I rest my backcourt. There's no way you can't tell me that could be done. So when you have the amount of young players, that's why very talented teams have a mixture of veterans and young players. And he just does not have the patience to deal with a lot of young players. I understand that, and I'm not trying to make Obi Toppin the greatest rookie that the Knicks have ever drafted. But you mean to tell me he could not have played more than 10 minutes a game? This year. Okay, last year he didn't play well enough to give you a lot of minutes. All right, he didn't. This year he played better. This year he deserved to have at least 12 to 15 minutes a game. You mean you could not find, there's no way you could find 12 to 15 minutes a game to play Obi Toppin when Julius Randle did not have the year that he had last year. Okay? Gotta be. Now, if you tell, well, Larry, Obi wasn't the best defensively. Did you watch this Knicks team defensively this year? Did you? Were they the same team they were last year? Absolutely not. And you're right. They overachieved because they just wore everybody out. They just jumped on people. And there were teams that weren't as good as they were. And you overcame them with effort. And they were surprised. They didn't expect the Knicks to play that way. Okay? I remember even Kyrie Irving made a statement to Tom Thibodeau afterwards and said, you guys play hard. Okay? But ultimately, so that's one scenario. But ultimately, when you get to the postseason, it's about talent. You may squeeze a win here or squeeze a win there, but when you play better competition, you need better talent. That's the bottom line. And until the Knicks get better talent, they're only going to go so far. I don't care who the coach is. They need better talent. And so my thought process was that they were going to continue to build through the draft. Now, I agree that with the 11th pick, there wasn't much. I didn't see a person that you could have with the 11th pick that would make a great impact. You've got a bunch of young players on this team already. So who's this player that's going to surpass either what you have? So if this player, the 11th player, was going to be better than some of the other rookies, then move them, as they did with Kevin Knox. Okay, they gave Kevin Knox X amount of years. Kevin Knox didn't improve much. So Kevin Knox moved on. He's now Cam Reddish. And Cam Reddish is not playing. So, like, once again, what's the game plan? So they moved, they made the deals, they moved the guys, and now they're clearing cap space. And they're clearing cap space to try to erase the mistake they had from last year. And that was signing Kemba Walker. Now, once again, they gambled. All right? Brandon Nimmo's gone deep. Tied at one. Mets batting top of the third. So, this is the deal. They moved on. I understood the game plan. It was wrong. Once again, as I said earlier, every time they have a game plan, it doesn't work. It's never plan A. All right, so whoever they were trying to get at the point guard didn't work. Couldn't get them. All right, so here's what we'll do. Let's try to make this work. Okay? So here we go. Let's get Kemba Walker, who's injured, and pair him with Derrick Rose, who's been injured. And then what happens is we'll combine the two of them, and maybe, you know, we're quickly running around and doing what he can, and maybe one or two of the guards, if we give them some playing time, you know, we'll work out. And what happens? Both Walker and Rose get hurt. And when Walker plays, he's not great. And you knew he wasn't great because he got a buyout. And normally when players get buyouts, they're not great. They're struggling. And we knew Kemba Walker's had a history of injuries. We knew. So they screwed up. Again. I mean, for a team with this type of talent, you can't move a number one draft choice. And just you move the number one draft choice and money and Kemba Walker. I mean, really? I mean, come on. Come on. You're not even building through the draft. What you're doing is you're trying to ship somebody now to get some free agency to hope that you get Rick Brunson. And listen, Brunson is a decent player. He's not a bad player. He's better than anybody you got at the guard position. You know, at this point, he is. He's better. But is he the answer? Is he the guy that's going to get you to the next level? Is he a guy that gets you closer to a championship game? If you bring him to this team as it is right now constituted, if you bring him to this team as it is right now with no changes, are you telling me that this team definitely will make the postseason? Without question. He's the difference. He's going to be able to score for you. He's going to be able to find other players. He's going to be able to make Evan Fournier, if Evan Fournier stays, he's going to make Evan Fournier a catch-and-shoot guy because that's really what Evan Fournier is. Yeah, occasionally against certain people, he can put the ball on the deck and go to the basket, but really, really, he's a catch-and-shoot guy. So you're telling me that Brunson comes in and he does everything. They're definitely a no-brainer. Seventh seed, sixth seed right now with him. I don't think so. I don't think so. Doesn't mean that he's not a good player. It doesn't mean that. What it says is, why are we putting all our eggs in that basket? When there's other players out there that you need, you're not one player away with this team. You're not. You're not even close. You're like three or four players away. Three or four at minimum. And we turn our attention now to the NBA at 1-800-919-3776. We're talking about the Knicks, and we'll take your calls in a second. But here's Woj. Here's Woj. And he was asked, with all this trading and getting rid of Kemba Walker and his $9 million salary, are the Knicks gearing up for a run at Brunson from Dallas?
The goal for this Knicks team right now, gather up assets using those first-round picks that they can use in future trades and get salary cap space to make a run in free agency at Dallas Mavericks guard Jalen Brunson. And so their goal is to try to lure Brunson to New York. His former agent, Leon Rose, is the president of the Knicks, and they just hired his father, Rick Brunson, as an assistant coach.
All right, so our Alan Hahn, who did a phenomenal job hosting the draft on ESPN Radio, was asked, are the Knicks all in on Brunson?
The bottom line is they move Kemba and his salary. They get three first-round picks next year, but moving Kemba's salary allows them to open up as much as $20 million in cap space. That is significant because with Kemba gone, they don't have a starting point guard. Could that money be now reserved for Jalen Brunson, whose father, Rick Brunson, was just hired by the Knicks as an assistant coach? Tom Thibodeau, Rick Brunson, Leon Rose, William Wesley, they all go back many, many years. They have known Jalen a long time. Reports have been that they are very interested in Jalen and bringing him in as a free agent. He had a very good run with the Mavericks in the playoffs as a scoring guard, get into the paint. So it just really tea leaves. It looks like that might be the motivation by the Knicks of, instead of taking a pick in 11, we're going to do this.
It's a gamble. It's a gamble. We'll see how it turns out. But once again, my frustration, okay, and I'm going to wait and see how it turns out. I may have to come on here and say, well, you know what, hey, they surprised me. But my whole thing is, why can't plan A work? It's never plan A. It's never plan A. It's never. That could, this can't be the whole thing. It can't. And once again, Jalen Brunson's a fabulous player. He's a fabulous player. It's well documented how well Dallas played and performed with him. And he could be even better. Okay, because he plays on the team where he doesn't even dominate the ball. Luka dominates the ball. So he's almost like an off guard. So just look at him and his ability to drive and go to the back. He's a very good player. But he's not all you need. So for me, plan A has got to be, okay, we get him, and then we get this player, and then we get this player, and then we move on. Okay, we've got three really good players. This is how they're going to work. And then we go on, and then we see how this works. And then next season, here's our next pick. We come back and we do, here's our next plan. We do this and we do that. And then, that's what I'm looking for. I mean, not, okay, let's sign Kemba, and now, all right, we got to use a draft choice to move Kemba to get rid of the money. Because we made a mistake to sign him and signed him last year. So now we got to erase that mistake by moving a young player. Rojas solo home run, we're tied at 2 in Miami. All right? And here's the one, and I'll get to the calls in a second. Here's the one thing I will say about that. The one thing I will say. At least you didn't dwell on the mistake. You realized it was a mistake. Get rid, move on. Okay, so I accept that. I do accept that. That's a positive. But don't just keep, oh, well, we go keep him on the, no, it's a mistake. Let's move on. Let's get rid of it. But that's not what the job is. You're supposed to know just how, what Kemba's availability was going to be before you signed him. You'd have been better off not signing him. You'd have been better off not signing him. 1-800-919-3776. Berto's in the car. Hey, Berto. You're next on 98.7.
Hey, how are you, Larry?
Good, Berto. What's
up? Good. I'm an old-timer, 65, so at least I've seen two championships in my life. But what was plan A? Was that to get Ivy? And now I would say plan B is to sign Brunson. But let me ask you a question. If we clear enough cap space to sign Brunson, we got a backcourt, we got a couple of forwards, who's playing center this year? And how are we going to sign Mitchell Robinson if there's no money?
That's an interesting question, Berto. And do you want Mitchell Robinson? Thanks for the phone call. Do you want him back? Because of his... Now listen, when he played last year, he was very good. But he... The only person his size that falls on the court more than him is Anthony Davis in L.A. Every time you turn around, Mitchell Robinson's getting up off the floor and he's hobbling. He's limping. He's doing this. So there's no question of his talent. He's pretty good for what he does. All right. Would you like to see him give you a little bit more offense just besides slamming dunk? Yeah, you'd like to see him. If you'd like to see that his game has evolved where you could run maybe a play through him that he could turn and hit a little short jumper. Would you like that? Yes. Okay, I know he was experimenting shooting threes. No, I'm not interested in that. Okay, I want him near the basket for his offensive rebounding prowess and his shot blocking, so I need him near the basket. So under that scenario, you know, he's pretty good. And what you have him for is a defensive guy. But I'm just concerned about his availability. He misses a lot of games. The past two seasons, he's missed a lot. JoJo's in Nutley. Hey, JoJo, you're next on 98.7.
Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Good, JoJo.
You know, I guess typical frustration just like you with the Knicks. And what bothers me is we're always doing the second plan, just like you said, like plan B. My point, the thing that bothers me the most is we wanted Jalen Brunson last year. And I know we were, like, thinking about trading him at the trade deadline. And I think that it would have been a great pick. And I don't hate on him now. But what bothers me about the Knicks is we always do everything the wrong way. Now that we didn't get him last year, and now that we are in a, I guess, a crappy situation, now we have to overpay to get these guys. And it always happens like this. So I don't know what we have to do, but my question to you, I guess, Larry, is it because of Tibbs and his style that we are getting these guys that could play both ways? That maybe that's why we didn't go I guess, all in for Ivy, or do we need to maybe Tibbs isn't the answer? And I do like him. I'm not against him. I'm just I'm asking what you think.
Well, JoJo, here's what I'll tell you. Here's my thoughts, and thanks for the phone call. I just think they couldn't make the deal for Ivy. Okay, that's all. That's what it is. I just think they couldn't make the deal. And if I'm Detroit, depending on what they were offering, I'd rather keep him. He's a talented young man. Okay? And when a team really desperately wants a player like that, but what did the Knicks have to move? What does the Knicks have that Detroit would want that would help them move forward? Now, you would think that if the Knicks had somebody in the front court that was really good after they moved Jeremy Grant to Portland, you would think that that would be a way for you to get Ivy. But the Knicks don't have talent. They don't have a lot of talent. That's the number one reason why they're in the position they're in. They have talent. They don't have talent. They don't. And so that's why they didn't get Ivy. Okay? That and the reason that they can't get a break. The Knicks don't get number one. Not since Patrick Ewing in 85. Knicks don't get the number one pick. They got number three with R.J. Barrett, and that looks pretty good. I think R.J.'s an excellent player who's getting better. But, you know, in that draft, they couldn't get number one with Zion, and I don't know whether the situation with Zion would be the way it is. Easy, seeing how what has happened to him from an injury standpoint, you would say, okay, good. But, hey, who's to say they wouldn't have taken Ja Morant? They never get the – it's never from the – and they've been in enough lotteries, okay? But they never get one or two. The highest they got is three, six, Ntilikina, eight, you know, Porzingis. I mean, and even when they get it high, they pick the wrong players. I mean, all this conversation about, oh, we should get Donovan Mitchell, oh, we should get Donovan Mitchell. You could have drafted Donovan Mitchell. But right now, we turn our attention to the Brooklyn Nets. They have been the story for a couple of weeks now. It's kept our good friend, who does a tremendous job covering the Nets for the Daily News, Christian Winfield, kept him very, very busy. He's got a couple of minutes now to chat with us here on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Chris, what's up, man?
You know, it's funny you say that he's very, very busy. It's a joke I like to tell people covering the Nets. You don't got to go looking for stories. Stories come find you. Whether it's Ben Simmons or Kyrie Irving or James Harden or whatever it is, it's always something. And here it is again. It continues to be something, Larry.
You know what? And it's funny. Other than the Knicks draft night, you'd have been on the front page again if it wasn't for the Knicks draft
night. Listen, man. Listen, it's quite a time to be covering the Nets, man. And I'm sure, as you know, and as a lot of people know, this is something that I reported as being on the table back at the end of May. And, you know, it was a lot more than just smoke. There's fire there, you know. There's a chance right now where we're looking at a team next year where neither KD or Kyrie are on the Nets. And I think that's worst-case scenario. I think that's a bit drastic, but I think it's in play. And if that ends up being the reality, that the Nets are going back to 20 and 28 wins, it's just a huge failure for everybody involved.
Christian, how did we get here?
I mean, shoot, where do we start? I mean, there's part of it where you have to put the blame on Kyrie for not doing what it takes to be on the floor with his teammates, right? Whether that's and part of me, and I've said this before, I think had he not taken 2 weeks off when the insurrection of the Capitol happened last year, had he not set the precedent for him missing time due to things outside of basketball, maybe the Nets would be a little bit more understanding of someone who wanted to, you know, make a conscious decision with his body. But it's become just something. It's always something, it appears, to Kyrie that keeps him off the floor. And the Nets want, and rightfully so, players who will be on the floor and be able to compete for a championship all season. The issue is, this is what you sign up for when you sign a guy like Kyrie. And the issue is, it's a package deal. You got KD because you signed Kyrie, right? So now you're in this situation where if you don't have Kyrie, if you're not inking him to a long-term deal and he wants out, future is unclear around Kevin Durant. We don't know if he wants to stay in Brooklyn without Kyrie here. We don't know what type of package the Nets are going to get in return. So when you say, where did this all start? Part of it started when the Nets signed Kyrie and KD. Part of it started when Kyrie started missing games. And it really started ramping up right at the end of the season when Kyrie said he wants to co-manage the franchise with Sosai and Sean Marks and KD. And then you have Sean Marks come out a week after that and say, hey, we want guys who are going to be here full time. So it's a terrible position for the Nets to be in, given everything that's at stake. And I hope they're able to come to an agreement, because this has been some of the most exciting basketball Barclays Center has ever seen. And to forfeit it right now because you don't want to give a guy guaranteed money over guaranteed years, it just leaves another what if. What if they? What if James Harden stayed? What if Kyrie got vaccinated? Well, what if the Nets gave Kyrie his money in his year?
Yeah, and it's a tough spot for the Nets front office, right? Because, you know, how could you give a player whose availability has been as inconsistent as his throughout his career, Christian, not just during his Net tenure, but throughout his career? How do you do that? Is there any way they could do, hypothetically, a two-year deal with structured incentives or something of that nature so that they show that they're trying to work with him and appease KD?
You also have to put yourself in the player's shoes. Would you sign a two-year deal if you have an injury history? Right? Would you sign a non-guaranteed contract if you get hurt, not knowing where your financial stability is going to come from in years 3, 4, and 5? Especially if you're one of the most talented players. I mean, I think that's unarguable here. We know how talented and skilled Kyrie is. It's just a matter of, is he going to be able to be on the floor? And so far through 3 years, the answer's been no. Kyrie played, 20, 28, and 58 games, or 54 games in 3 years he's been there. Availability has been an issue. But the other side of the coin is the Nets probably should have known that this was on the table, right? When you sign Kyrie, you know he's got injury history. You know he's got trauma surrounding him. They pulled the trigger on that deal anyway, and that's what got KD here in the first place. You wanted Kevin Durant, he came with Kyrie Irving, happened to come with DeAndre Jordan as well. And now we're here to where you're going to basically punt what you have now because you want to make a point to a guy who's really skilled but has issues staying on the floor. I'm not sure we see Kyrie sign a two-year deal. You know, I think we're looking at 3 or 4. But I'm also pretty certain we're not looking at a 5-year deal either. And that kind of shows you where we're at right now.
Do we know where KD stands at this point? Do we know that – obviously, he's backing his guy. Well, we know that. But
yeah.
Is he – how far will he back him? How far is he willing to go?
You know, I would say that – I don't know. I don't know how far KD is willing to go. I think that him staying in Brooklyn is going to be tied, if Kyrie is leaving, it's going to be tied to what type of package they're able to get back. Right? Mm-hmm. If you're not able to get back another star-caliber player in a deal for Kyrie, I don't see it happening, right? Because KD staying in Brooklyn is going to be tied to the Nets odds winning a championship. You're telling me you've got Ben Simmons coming up back surgery. You got Joe Harris, who just got 2 ankle surgeries. You know, you have no cap space to sign free agents, which means you only have trade exceptions. And if you're using a trade exception, you've got to give another team assets to get that player returned. Nets don't have very many assets. They gave a lot of them away in the James Harden deal. You know, so it's a tough situation for the Nets at the front office to be in. It's a tough situation for Kevin Durant to be in. This is year 17 for him, right? The clock is ticking. He wants to win some championships on his own. So it's going to be tough, but it's going to be a lot of fireworks these next couple of days. I think we're going to see a resolution coming soon.
Well, I hope so because, listen, the Nets need to know what their season is going to look like and what moves they have to make because they're going to have to, you know, try to substantiate it and pick and choose to make up the rest of their roster. Let's talk a little bit about Ben Simmons, who's the other wild card in this scenario.
Sure.
Do we expect him to be back this season? Do we know what to expect from him with the back injury? Do we know what he can give this team?
We don't know anything except he's been recovering, you know, and I would assume that we're going to see Ben Simmons looking like the old Ben Simmons when you consider this is a year plus that he's been away from basketball. He's got the back procedure. He's got time to step away from the game, get his head right, figure out what he needs to prioritize for himself. And I would also assume that he's going to be in Brooklyn for a long time. You know, I don't think that the Nets are going to trade him, especially while you have all this drama going on with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. To also lose Ben Simmons in the middle of all that will probably be another loss. So we're looking at Ben Simmons being a cornerstone of this franchise. Unless I don't know, if you're telling me, you know, you got Kevin Durant, you got Kyrie Irving under contract. Let's trade Ben Simmons for somebody else, maybe. But in a world where you're potentially losing Kyrie and KD is unstable, you don't know if he's going to leave or not. I think the Nets kind of hedge their bets in a future around Ben Simmons. Then you build around that. But the issue there is we don't know what type of Ben Simmons we're getting. We don't know what condition his back is in, right? We know he had surgery. We know he's been recovering. But what happens when he starts practicing and ramping up, right? Is he going to flare up again? That's kind of a worst-case scenario as well. So it is so much uncertainty and unknowns right now with this team that this is easily the most important free agency or summer in their history, at least in Brooklyn's history. And I can't wait to see. June 29th, we know that's when Kyrie has to decide if he's going to opt in or opt out of that player option. And once that happens, we're going to see the rest of the dominoes start to fall for sure.
See, here's my concern. I'm talking with Christian Winfield, covers the Nets for the Daily News here on 98.7 ESPN. Here's my concern. If you move him, first of all, I don't know who would take him with the salary, A.
Right.
B, if you move him, Chris, you're not going to get equal value for him. You're not, because people know you're trying to get rid of him.
Right. We're talking about Ben Simmons in this, right?
Well, no, we're talking about Kyrie.
Listen, I still think there are some teams that want Kyrie on their roster. I'm thinking about the Miami Heat. I'm thinking about the Los Angeles Lakers. I think those are two teams that would be foolish not to trade for him, especially when you're knocking on the door of a championship. But it's also on the other side, what are the Nets going to get back in return?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's been any indication that the Nets are interested in acquiring Russell Westbrook. You know, with my mind, I think the Heat probably pose the best package. If you're telling me you can get Kyle Lowry and maybe another player like a Tyler Herro or something like that, for Kyrie and maybe you throw Joe Harrison or something like that, maybe you're then able to keep Kevin Durant happy, right? You tell me you replace Kyrie with Kyle Lowry and then you get another impact player and you still have the ability to use those trade exceptions to pick up other players. That's what it has to be, right? If you're saying, okay, we're done with Kyrie, you better put a team around Kevin Durant that can compete at the highest level, that can beat the Celtics, that's not going to get swept, right? That can beat the Bucks. I don't know if the Nets are going to be able to do that, which is why I've always said, hey, the best case right now is just retaining Curry, whatever you want to call it, and understand that as long as you're KD and Curry and Curry, you're knocking on the door of a championship versus whatever else you're going to be doing if you lose them. Because if you lose them, I think you're going back to ping-pong balls. Now, the Nets don't even know. They traded those picks and the pick rights to Houston, so you're basically going back to square one, and square one was not any fun for anybody.
No, it wasn't. Chris, let's face it. The best deal for the Nets is to try to work this out with Kyrie for him to stay. What are the chances of that happening?
Man, at this point, I don't know. I'd like to say that the Nets know what's best for them, and what's best for them is, you know, keeping this group together and building around it. Listen, if you have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and Ben Simmons on the same team, and you've also got Joe Harris, maybe you re-sign Nick Claxton, Patty Mills might opt in. If they keep this core together and build on it, you're going to – it's hard for me to find another team that has more talent, right? And I think that's what you have to bet on. You bet on the talent 4 years ago or whatever summer that was, 2019, when they first came, you know, to leave it on the table right now when you've come so close. I mean, last year, we're talking about if Kevin Durant's big show wasn't on the line, then that's probably winning it all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this year, you got a trade, you got Coleman, you've got all the stuff going on. I think this team needs one shot at just being fully healthy, having everybody on the floor, having a roster that makes sense, so much. Some roster gymnastics at times, but some of these teams, as you see in roster redundancy, guys who do the same thing on the floor. This season, I'm thinking James Johnson, DeAndre Bembry, Bruce Brown, all in the same roster, competing for the same minutes. They need to put a roster that makes sense around these guys and go after it. And I think that's their best chance. Doing anything else, I think, just leaves you so far away from the Bucks, the Celtics, the Heat, even the Sixers are going to get better. I think the Nets will take a step down, and if they take a step down, I think Kevin Durant's out of there.
All right, Chris, let's look at the rest of this roster for a second. Are we looking at, Griffin coming back? Are we looking at these guys who came along for a chance on this ride for a championship? What's the contract situation with these guys?
You know, the Nets have quite a few unrestricted free agents. The veterans, I would assume, are gone. You know, LaMarcus Aldridge was basically glued to the bench.
Yeah.
Blake Griffin didn't play up until the last few games. I think those guys want to play. They want to make something of themselves in these last few years of their careers. Patty Mills is going to be an interesting decision. He's got a player option. He can opt out. If he opts out, I think that tells us a lot about the direction the Nets are headed, because Patty Mills is the guy they were selling as their culture piece, right? He's their locker room guy, the guy that keeps everything together. If he leaves, and this is an Australian guy who's close with Ben Simmons, who's close with Sean Marks, if Patty's gone, I think that tells us a lot. And we also got to watch out for Bruce Brown and Nick Claxton. You know, there's teams that want those guys' services. The Nets don't have cap space, but they can exceed the salary cap and pay even more luxury tax to retain those guys. What are they going to do? How much is the luxury tax in this economy? How much luxury tax does Joe Tsai want to pay to retain guys that may not even really make a huge enough difference between where they are now and getting a championship, right? So there's a lot of decisions to be made. And then you've got the mid-level exception. I reported that they're interested in giving that to P.J. Tucker, but the Sixers have 3 years, $30 million they can offer him. And then you've got those trade exceptions that I told you. You have to find some players with some other teams that maybe don't want to be there, maybe making too much money. Interesting time. I can't wait to cover it in.
I know you can't. Last thing, Kristen, thanks for a couple minutes. Where does Steve Nash fit in all this? Rumors and reports of, you know, Kyrie conducting his own practices after Steve Nash had practice, and you know, how was he able to, you know, how does he come out of this situation?
This is about to be a very, very interesting first, I'd say, maybe 2 weeks of the regular season for Steve Nash, because he's got to prove to the world that he's a real head coach. And, we've given him a lot of slack for being a first-year coach on the job, and then year two, just the hand he was dealt in terms of COVID, in terms of players being unavailable, we understand that. Year three, he's got to show us that, you know, hiring him over Ime Udoka was the right choice, which is a tough call because Ime Udoka just took the Celtics to the finals, right? So I think the first 3 or so weeks of the regular season, we're going to see what kind of coach Steve Nash is and whether or not the team can move with him forward. So it's unfair to judge him on what he did last season, in my opinion, just because so many guys were in and out of the lineup and then COVID hit, and then that's that 13 guys and the health and safety protocols. Kevin Durant gets hurt, right? But at the same time, I mean, everybody went through the same issues, and some of the coaches just looked a step above him. So we need to see a better version of Steve Nash coaching, and that we don't see that in the first 3 weeks of the regular season. I think the Nets are going to have a decision to make.
Boy, you have a lot of fun in your future, my friend. Enjoy a couple of days until the free agent frenzy hits. So, you know, try to get some rest this weekend, because it ramps up again in a couple of days.
I'm getting big rest right now, Larry. I'm inside. I'm laying in bed, man. I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks for checking in, my friend. We'll talk soon.
My guy, talk soon.
All right. That's Christian Winfield. Does a great job. You can follow him at Chris Splashed on Twitter.